This is the Leadership Communication Show, a podcast to help people like you be the inspiring and influential leaders their people need. I'm Michael Paperno, and I'm a communication expert, teacher, and coach. My personal mission is to help good leaders be great leaders through the power of communication. I promise you'll learn something from each guest on this show that will help you along your personal leadership journey. Okay, on with the show. Today's conversation is with Matthew Hogan. Matthew works with leaders, entrepreneurs, and executives to find purpose and clarity in their work and in their lives. Through his coaching, facilitating, and teaching, he's helped countless people listen to their inner voice and discover their true potential. Matthew has an endless fascination and devotion to the path of self-mastery and living an aligned life. His own personal journey, which we'll learn about in a moment, has created the foundation for what inspires and propels him, and has also defined how he supports his clients. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thank you, Michael. And I was already looking forward to being here before I got on the call, and then just our few minutes chatting before we started recording, I'm like, this is going to be fun today.
It is going to be. I really appreciate you doing this, and my listeners appreciate it too. So tell us a little bit more about your background and your story. What has brought you to today and what you do today as a teacher and facilitator and coach?
Well, there are many moments I really do experience my life as just a series of events that teach me more about myself and more about the life I want to create. And the springboard moment of that for me was in 2004 when I attempted suicide and I put a bullet in my brain. And that led to a series of events through my end of my teens, all the way through my 20s up to today. And if I were to put it tangibly, there was the journey of leaving my hometown and then finding my way into university and trying to build education and intellect so I actually had the skills and intellectual capacity to navigate this world. And then that further took me into my corporate work, where I spent the better part of a decade supporting Google. And by the time I left, I had built from the ground up a team, from a team of four to a team of 100 around the U.S. And that is where I actually transitioned to business for myself and really ventured out to travel the world to better understand what it is to be human and what it is to be alive. And I could go much deeper in all these pieces, but the core thread for me, Michael, all along has been, since that day I shot myself and that recovery period, there has been this unrelenting energy or knowing inside of me that says, I have so much potential, and I want to devote my life to understanding it, feeling it, and living it. And I can zoom on all these different areas, but that's the core thread. And that has been what has taken me to all these other different experiences that we might call university, corporate, travel, relationships, money, all those things. But that's the underlying piece.
Yeah, and that day when that moment happened to you where you, you know, attempted suicide back in 2004, is that like where, I mean, I can't imagine what you must have gone through, not only with that experience, but also with the recovery of that. Was it clear to you, you know, shortly after that moment that you were going on a different path, or was this something where you've gotten to now with this quest for self-mastery? Is it something that has kind of built in the almost two decades since then?
It was born from that experience, and I'll tell you just a brief story around that time. After the night I shot myself, I went through a period of being in a coma, and then when I came to, they told me that I may never walk again. And so here I am in a wheelchair, never knowing if I will walk again. And I remember it vividly to this day. It's December. It's cold. I'm in a hospital gown. I'm in a wheelchair. I'm sitting on the roof of this hospital. At the time, I smoked. I was smoking a cigarette. And it just dawned on me that everything that led up to that moment, I put myself there. It was me. There was no one to blame. It was me. And when I accepted that responsibility in that moment, I remember this like click, like a light switch went off inside of me. And it was like this fire filled my body, this fire of possibility. And it was in that moment that I, for the first time in my life, had a vision of a possibility of a better life. And that has been, was the springboard moment that has carried me forward for nearly two decades.
Mm. And is that, you know, is that kind of related to feeling fulfilled? And because we hear that word about, you know, fulfillment and, you know, finding, you know, living an aligned life you have, you know, is something that you talk about a lot. We hear terms like self-leadership, self-mastery, but pretty much, you know, most people are just trying to, out there trying to do their best and live their best life. I guess for you, because you've really laser focused on that piece. And I'm curious, you know, how you see it, how you see living an aligned life. How do you define that? How do you define really fulfilled and being purposeful in your life?
One thing I want to acknowledge is that I try to be mindful to not get too caught up in concepts like fulfilled, purpose and those things, because there's a thousand different ways to interpret it. But that if I were to really get to the core that I believe all of us can translate and relate into, is it's really about what's the life that when I get to the end of it and I'm taking my last final breath, that I can be like, I'm really grateful for the life that I chose to live. And I'm dying feeling like I've really lived. That's what pulls me forward. That is really the essence of all of it, without getting caught up in any other words. And the important piece of that is only I can choose that. Only I can decide that. I can share things that I've seen and learned along the way. If imagine you and I are talking about it, but at the end of the day, only Michael can decide this is what's going to allow me to get to those final breaths and feel that way. Only Matthew can decide for himself. And just like every listener out there, we can listen to different teachers and books and gurus and all the things. But at the end of the day, we're the ones that get to go, oh, this is it. This is the direction. This is right for me. And that's the way it's supposed to be. So I just wanted to speak that rather than trying to go into definitions.
No, I appreciate that. And I like that. I like those words that you use, the life you chose to live, because I think that a lot of people are going through life on autopilot, feeling like, well, things just happen. Everything. I mean, I hear people say everything happens for a reason, whether you believe that or not, that's fine. But I often am coaching people. And also I believe that we have great power in the choices that we make every day. And you know, you're self-employed like me. You chose to do that. You chose to, to get on the path that you're on. And there's decisions that we make every single day. And I love that instead of like saying like, what's my purpose? What's the meaning of all this? It's kind of like, you know, in the end, are you going to be happy with what you chose? And I think that's kind of neat.
And I wonder for you, Michael, like just personally, how did I want to say this? How do you personally relate to what I just shared for your own life?
Yeah, it's interesting because when you said that, that's very much how I view things. Let me put it this way. I was going to say to you, Matthew, you know, I want to be remembered as a person who whatever and everything. When this is all over, this wonderful life, whatever that is, I want to be able to just really feel good that I was kind, I was a teacher and a helper. Because my theme throughout my whole life, and especially my career looks like a pinball machine, all different industries and all this kind of stuff. And when you look at my listeners know this, a little bit of this, when you look at my career path, it looks like he's been all over the place. But there's a very clear theme line in there, which I didn't really see until I was in my 40s. But I'm a lover and teacher of communication. And I will, if someone needs help in that way, I love to show up and be there for them to lean on. Like, that's just what I love to do. And in the end, I want to make sure that I've made the choices that have helped, allowed me to do that for others as much as possible.
And so with that, it seems like, and you tell me, knowing that about yourself, knowing who you want to be in the world, you know, those pieces you said about when you get into your life, you know, you want to know yourself as that, and knowing what you love to do and are good at, it seems like that informs like your daily path each and every breath of the day.
Totally. Yeah. It totally does. It totally does.
And so, we don't even have to, and we don't even have to put labels on it.
No. That's actually an interesting thing. And that's when you were talking about labeling and words and everything, I was thinking to myself, geez, you know, Matthew's really kind of right there, because the way I define purpose or fulfillment may be completely different than the way you do. Mm-hmm. And neither one of us is wrong. And neither one of us has to persuade each other that each other is right. We can just let it be. That it is what it is. So that's, I really like that sentiment of not necessarily trying to label it, but just, you know, letting it be what it is. I want you to talk a little bit about you and your work though here, because it all kind of comes together. Last time we talked, you know, you and I were kind of brainstorming about what we could maybe talk about on the show. Mm-hmm. We were getting to know each other, and we kept landing on this idea of, you know, you really can't engage in power and influence other people as a leader unless you've really done that work for yourself. And I think that that's so true. And I think that's a big piece that's missing in a lot of leadership these days. A lot of folks are elevated to leadership positions because of their skill or their craft or whatever, but they've never done that work to really define who they are as a leader, or done the work to be a self-leader. I mean, self-leadership's now like a big buzzword on social media for a good reason, because you need to influence and engage others, you got to really know how to do it to yourself. Talk about that. Talk about your perspective on that and how you help folks do that.
What I have found, I'm trying to see if there's maybe a story that I can use a little bit better. And when I was still in corporate, and I had, over the course of 4.5 years, I went from basically being an individual contributor to a manager or a supervisor, then a training manager and supervisor. Then I basically, over the course of 4.5 years, was promoted 7 times and moved up to director. So quick trajectory.
Fast,
that I,
yeah.
that I had to constantly be growing into.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the sticking points that I found when I was either struggling to get movement across the team, whether it was when I was running one market or 15, I could almost always trace back to how well I knew myself. And so when I was clear on what inspired me, like what inspired me to wake up every day, what inspires me to take action, what inspires me to want to work with a team, what inspires me to lean in and cooperate and collaborate. Like, these are just a few questions. The more I can come to discover the way I am, because the flip side is to that, what are the things that squash my inspiration?
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that keep me from taking action? What are the things that make me want to rebel against other people?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the more we can know ourselves, we can see how, when we look at our work environment, our corporate environment, like, oh, the way that HR an analyst talks to me, actually, the way I receive that and relate to that makes me want to rebel rather than cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more we can dig into that with ourselves, and that's been a big thing for me, because I remember how for a while I actually created more tension across departments when I would try to do cross-organizational initiatives, because I didn't know myself well enough to see how I was actually creating problems in the different departments. And so that deep dive of self allowed me to start going, oh, I could see why that might piss off the director of recruiting. I can see why the head of HR is not listening to my requests. You know, and that really takes some humility and a process of self-discovery, because it shifts not only perspective of self, it also shifts how people may be relating to us and why.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we have that perspective, we can shift our communication strategies. And I know that's where you're an expert at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so how do you go about getting this self-awareness so that you can see how you're, you know, causing problems throughout departments, or maybe, you know, why maybe certain people rub you the wrong way, or certain behaviors rub you the wrong way? Like, how do you start that process of really looking inward?
Yeah. you know, often what I do with my clients and also with myself is I start with a specific moment in time, a specific example. Instead of going, HR never listens to me,
right,
or no one ever does what I want them to do, they need to respect me, they need to do this, like really just narrowing it down. Tell me about one specific time that this happened. Oh, well, last week when I was on the call with the team, I tried to share about this new strategy we're going to implement. And it seemed like everyone was indifferent. It seemed like no one wanted to move on what I said. And it was like I was receiving crickets. Okay, great. Now we have something tangible. Now right. let's work our way backwards. Let's actually start to dive into, first off, how much of that is true and how much of it is a mental story.
Mm-hmm.
So we can make all these interpretations that, oh, they didn't like it, they're not enthusiastic about it. But first off, what proof do you have that is true?
Mm-hmm.
Because think of how many times we can make up something based on perception.
We fill in the gaps a lot.
Yeah. Oh, they didn't speak, so therefore that means they didn't like it.
Right.
And so notice we're creating that ourselves. So let's start with what is reality and what's a story.
Right.
Let's start there. And now once we have some of the facts and we can see where we may be just trying to make things up to fill up our own discomfort, we can go a little bit further and go, okay, as one example, given the facts, what does that show me now? Does it show me that actually things are fine? And actually, there's nothing to worry about, and I just got to learn how to let things go?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there something tangible that we need to go into further? And that allows us to see if we can just pause there and be like, everything's good, don't freak out,
mm-hmm.
let's move forward. Or do we need to go a little bit deeper?
Right, right. Oh, I wish I had met you when I was in my late 20s, early 30s starting a business, because, you know, I would have like taken that pause and stopped and say, okay, what's the mental story here and what are the facts? That's so important. That's so important. You talked about inspiring yourself. And I talk a lot in my work about motivation, because a lot of times I'll talk to leaders who, you know, they'll say, well, you know, I need behavior change from a certain staff member, or, you know, this person really needs to be doing this aspect of their job better, and I don't know how to have the conversation with them, or I don't know how to, you know, we've talked about it, doesn't seem to be getting better. And mm-hmm. a lot of times the question I ask them, and it kind of shifts the things for them, is, well, how would you motivate them to actually want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they've never even thought about that. And really, yeah. if you want behavior change, that's really the only way you're going to genuinely get it, right?
Yeah. You know, something that came to me is a memory of when I was in the early days of my corporate time, being just that clear insight that the best team members are intrinsically motivated, not extrinsically, meaning they're more motivated by their own internal drive and initiative rather than something in their environment.
Mm-hmm.
Money's great. Acknowledgement's great. But it comes from inside them. And so with that, you know, kind of to your point, if you're a lot of what we can look at as leaders is be like, oh, I just want this person to do this thing instead of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't always stop to, and this has been very true for me, I'd be like, well, your presenting behavior isn't what I want it to be. But where I would get stuck and hurt myself and cause problems and slow the process and limit performance is I would be like, well, like you said, what actually creates them to want to change that behavior? Am I just trying to tell them to do mm-hmm. it differently? Or am I actually having a real conversation with them that allows the behavior to shift based on a relationship rather than an authoritarian, I need you to do this or else.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to do this, and just like barking orders.
Right, right.
And I'm curious, I just said a lot of things, but in your experience, what do you hear in that is valuable, useful? And what more might you add to that?
Yeah, well, the whole thing of, you know, the whole thing in this conversation just about specifically barking orders and basically saying to someone, you know, I just see so much of that in, well, I'm kind of stumbling here because I have a thought in my head and I'm not getting it out clearly. I'm surprised, Matthew, that there is still so much of that authoritarian expectation of, you know, especially in performance reviews and all of that kind of stuff. It's like, we need you to be better on this. We need you to care more about this. We need you to do that. And it just shocks me that sitting here in 2023, that the business world hasn't changed that. Mm-hmm. We're just talking now about, in the past decade, about managers as coaches. And that needed to change 20, 25 years ago, I think. So it's just interesting to me, you know, when we have conversations like this, I keep thinking, I reflect back on my behavior as a leader when I had a staff and how I was even though I'm a communication person and care deeply about interpersonal relationships, about how I did things like that too. Mm-hmm. Wasn't able to really figure out how to motivate someone. Maybe that comes with age, but I also think it comes with training, and I also think it comes with fundamentally looking at the business world a bit differently. I do love that, you know, there are a lot of people out there, and I've had some of them on my show, who talk about purpose and mattering and well-being and all of that. A lot of people look at that stuff as fuzzy, but it's not.
Yeah.
We're humans who show up to do work.
The thing that kept coming to me as you were talking is that, and I'm going to stop speaking for other people. I'm just going to speak for me.
Yeah.
Is that one of the biggest things that was the struggle for me is I literally didn't know how to create a relationship with another human being.
Hmm.
And when I don't know how to create a relationship with another human being, and yet I have the pressure of this agenda, this target, this company goal, I know it needs to be done, but because I don't know how to truly create a relationship with someone, I just use what strategies I have.
Right.
And some of them or like throwing spaghetti at the wall. Well, that kind of worked.
Right.
And others are like, well, that didn't work. So I'm just like flopping around trying to figure out how to do it. And for me, two of the most dominant styles that showed up for me when I was floundering around was I would either lean in and try to just like, get it done. I need you to do this.
Right, right.
Or I would avoid the conversations.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, it'll resolve itself. You know, we don't need to talk about anything. And it was because inside of myself, part of it was I didn't have the confidence to speak up in some cases where I'd be like, oh, I just need to let it lie. I don't want to rock the boat too much. Or I would go on the other side. I'd be highly aggressive. And I think I would need to assert myself and make my point. But really, that comes from my own insecurity still.
Mm-hmm.
And finding that middle ground between avoidance and aggression, and in that middle ground is confidence. Mm-hmm. And that middle ground is, hey, I can have a conversation with you. There doesn't need to be all this urgency. There doesn't need to be all this pressure. And we can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been one of the biggest things for me is discovering how to have an actual relationship and create one with someone.
Right. And when did that insight really start to take shape for you? Where were you in your career when you realized that?
I was 28, and it was right after we had done a quarterly business review. I think we were out in Mountain View, Google's headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And I had done a lot of preparation working with different departments, and the presentation went off well. But then the VP I reported into at the time told me after, he goes, presentation's great. Everything landed well there. He goes, and I'm getting reports of all the destruction you created in relationships with the departments in your way here to the presentation.
Wow.
So I had to learn very quickly that I was like, oh, so yes, I needed this presentation and I needed it to go well, but my way of getting there left people complaining to my boss about me because I came in with this expectancy attitude. I came in with this, I'm somehow more important than everyone else. And all this way of being with people that, frankly, people are like, why would I want to work with you?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something that I had to come to terms with. And going back to my initial story about being in that wheelchair, it was that day that I also learned how to take responsibility for myself and stop blaming everyone else for my problems.
Mm.
And so since that was already ingrained in me, when all of that started to come back, I go, crap. I'm not going to blame the person in HR. I'm not going to blame the person recruiting. What do I need to learn here about myself? Where's my responsibility here? And it took a hard hit at my confidence.
I'm sure.
But it was one of the biggest growth points in my career that really set the stage for so much after it.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with that, Matthew, how you've had the courage and the strength to move past, move and grow in those situations. Because listen, I mean, I've worked with a lot of people in my career who behave like that, and I don't think ever would realize that it was what they were doing to relationships along the way or cared, frankly. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit sad, but there's a lot of that out there, yeah. Unfortunately, you know, but it comes back to this self-awareness thing. How do they really find out that they're being perceived that way? Well, you had a situation where someone told you, which is great. Other people, they just keep on coasting through and causing that damage, and it doesn't matter to them. But see, that's not me. For me, relationships are everything. Yeah. And that's a lot of what I do with my clients is to help them. I like to come in, Matthew, when it's a good team or a good set of leaders who just want to be better. It's not completely broken, and I don't have to fix the house from the foundation up. Because when mm-hmm. they're already good, and you can come in and really teach them how to be respectful of everybody's beautiful differences that we're bringing to the table and celebratory of that and realize that people are care about and are motivated by different things. They bring different strengths to the table. They react differently when things go kaboom and things aren't going well. And when you can kind of level set, I hate these buzzwords, but when you can show everybody the positive regard that is showing up every day, but it's showing up differently, and that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's really good stuff, because then you're giving people the toolkit to be able to not only be self-aware, but also aware that others are not viewing the world the way you view it necessarily.
You know, when you shared about these clients that are ideal to support and that you're capable of support, because again, what really came to me, it was an acronym I once heard from a coach, and I really like it. It's called HOW: honest, mm-hmm. open, and willing. If we have someone that's honest, that's willing to be honest, they're open about new possibilities, they're open to look at themselves, they're open to look at alternate facts, alternate possibilities, and they're willing to take actions, willing to look at it, willing to talk about it, major change can happen. Mm-hmm. I love that acronym because it's mm-hmm. so true. And I also wanted to share one story of a client. I remember one of the biggest breakthrough conversations we ever had was he was sitting there talking about how he wasn't meeting his goals. And as he's talking about it, I can hear how he's sharing, like, this person didn't do this, this person didn't give me that. And I just paused for a moment and just calmly asked him, I said, when's the last time you cared about someone else's goals besides your own? Mm. And it just kind of smacked him in the face. And he goes, well, shit, right. I've never cared about anyone's goals other than my own. I said, well, how do you think you're going to get to these goals? By yourself?
Right.
And it was just one of those moments where it's not that we're not open and willing. It's just we're like a fish in water. Can we see the water?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everybody's moving so fast too these days that, you know, they don't always stop to consider. I mean, that's why empathy is such another buzzword of today, which I'm glad it is, because it's an important aspect of leadership and relationship building. But it doesn't come as easy to some people as it comes to others. And it takes work, you know, to bring that in.
Mm-hmm. On the topic then, I would love to ask you, because all these buzzwords, they're there and they're valuable, but then what's the direct experience of them, right? Mm-hmm. I can think about empathy, but it doesn't mean I know how to feel empathy. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious for you, what does empathy feel like for you, and how do you experience it?
Oh, I'm a big old empathizer. So it's extremely long, extremely strong, and it always has been for me. You know, empathy, when you look at textbook definition, of course, is, you know, being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes or try to really understand and honor someone else's experience, even if it's different from your own, what they're going through. I will tell you, Matthew, I don't know what it is. It's a thing with me, but I can definitely feel other people's, I don't know what it is. Experiences. Like, I don't know if it's because I'm a good listener, just because I am someone who really does care. And I also, you know, from my upbringing and everything, was always taught from, you know, very early age to honor what somebody else's experience, even though it's not the experience that I had as, you know, in typical suburbia in America. So, but yeah, for me, it's a deeper level of connecting. It's a deeper level of really honoring someone else's experience truly and fully, and letting your filters and your lens of what that experience is for you or should be go out the window, and just believe that it's theirs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's a few things, if I may pull them out. One is, it sounds like from an early age, you grew up in an environment where empathy was either shared or shown in your household.
Mm-hmm.
So you had direct experience with it,
mm-hmm.
Which gave you very early start with this capacity as a human. And I, you know, for many people, I know that there's, if that empathy is not shown in the household when they're young, where else are you going to learn it?
Where else? Yeah.
Right. And so it has to be learned at some point.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing, is it sounded like you experienced it at such a young age. And
gotta give credit to my mother. Absolutely.
Yeah. Credit to Michael's mom.
Yeah.
She's listening. Hi.
She will be.
Uh-huh. Okay. And then the other piece was, what was the other piece that really stood out? You were talking about the other people's experiences and not letting our filters like jump in. And if I were to untangle that a little bit or unravel that a bit, in that it's almost like, let people have the experience they're having without reacting to their experience.
Mm-hmm.
Let them feel the way they feel without judging them. Let them think the way they think without feeling like you need to fight them. Because judging and fighting another's experience just creates this drama cycle.
Yeah.
And if we can see that people are allowed to feel what they feel, and that's okay. People are allowed to think what they think, and that's okay. And be able to meet in conversation and understanding, we can get a lot done at a really quick pace.
We can. Oh, I love how you put that. That was put beautifully. Absolutely. I 100% agree. And you're right. I mean, we can get a lot done if we would just do that for each other. So we need to be more mindful of the power in that. And I think that's a takeaway for our listeners today, is to, you know, really look at how you can do that for others, because it really is a gift.
I want to add one note to that, to go back to the main thread of what we've been talking about here, is that internal piece. It's really hard to show empathy and understanding for someone else if we don't know how to do it for ourselves.
Right.
So when I don't deliver on the revenue for the P&L this month, can I offer myself empathy? Can I offer myself understanding? Or if I'm with my spouse and I come home from a stress day of work and I react to something he or she said in a way that is not ideal, can I offer myself empathy? Can I offer myself understanding? Or do I fight myself? Do I judge myself? Because if we can take those moments, they offer a clue of how we treat other people too.
Oh, Matthew, we could do a whole nother show on just that for our leaders out there who struggle with that. Because, I mean, leadership is hard. And the leaders that I know and coach are hard on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I mean, it's a lot of responsibility, not only often leading a company and being responsible to investors or whoever your stakeholders you're responsible to, but also your team, and then also your home life and your community life. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I mean, I think that's a really wonderful sentiment to leave our listeners with today, is, you know, make sure that you're doing that for yourself as well.
Mm. And I want to add one piece to that.
Yeah.
No matter how much responsibility you have, no matter how much pressure you feel, you deserve your own self-empathy. Mm-hmm. You deserve your own understanding. Because when you can feel that for yourself, it's much easier to offer it to other people. And life starts to take on a whole new feeling of magic and enjoyment and, dare I say, fulfillment, when we can connect to that in ourselves. And that's where some things really start to move for us.
Yeah, I love that. Matthew, tell my listeners two things. Number one, is there anything you've got going on that's exciting that you want to share with my listeners today? And number two, how they can find out more about you and your work?
Yeah. So for what I'm up to right now, I'm in collaboration with a couple of men right now where we are creating more and more spaces for male leaders to be able to come in where they're at, whether they're walking with a challenge with emotions, or they're challenged with really moving their careers to the next level, really finding that zest for life where they feel like they are the spouse they want to be, the leader they want to be, the man they want to be. We're creating spaces, more and more spaces for these leaders to come in and together work through these edges that allow them to really step into that life where it's like, ah, this is the life for me. And why I say that specifically is because I'm not here to tell anyone what the right life is for them. But what we want to create and are creating is a space for people to choose their own adventure, if you will. Mm-hmm. So because I know for men, we need a lot of autonomy. We need to be able to decide this is right for me, this isn't right for me, and don't want someone telling us that. And so we are in the mix of creating more and more spaces for men to come in. And those are some of the groups we're already running. So that's growing.
Sounds interesting. Yeah.
And the other thing is, as far as people reaching me, they can reach me at matt@matthoganworldwide.com or just go directly to my website at matthoganworldwide.com. And if you are someone listening to this and feel like right now you don't want to talk to me, that's cool. But what I have created as a result of my past 20 years since that day I shot myself, it's been all about two things for me. It's about finding new clarity and getting new direction. And continuing to follow that. Those have been the two big pieces for me. And so on my website, there is a guidebook that you can download that will allow you to help, allow you to find your own clarity and next steps. So download that, try it out. And if you want, reach out to me and let me know how it's going for you if you even want to talk about it.
Excellent. Well, Matthew, I will put your website link and the link to the guidebook in the show notes. So if you didn't copy that down when he was talking, you can grab that right from the show notes. Listen, Matthew, I really, really appreciate you coming on the show today, sharing your story with us and talking with us about how leaders can, you know, reach more self-mastery and live the life that they want to be living. So I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for doing it.
Thank you, Michael. I really enjoyed our time today. And for everyone listening, thank you for tuning in.
That's it for this episode of the Leadership Communications Show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you think this show can help other people you know, please tell them about it too. To learn more about me and my work, head over to my websites at michaelpiperno.com. and wearecomvia.com. While you're there, be sure to check out all of the leadership communication tips and tricks I share on my blogs. See you next time.